Friday edition. Away we go on Mr. Relevant. I'm Alex Strofe hanging out with you from the Gruber Law Offices. One Call, That's Us studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Joshy DiMaggio, as always, along for the ride. Producer Tiny Hands, Hunter Vaughn, back at the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison. Good to have the boys on board. Part-time Will Summers is here, too. Maybe we'll hear from him a bit later. Jam-packed Super Bowl preview show for you today. Super Bowl champion Chris Canty will join us from ESPN Radio's and Sportsmanlike down on Radio Row in New Orleans. Three-time Super Bowl champion, should have been Super Bowl MVP. And former Wisconsin running back James White will join us as we get ready for Sunday's big game between the Chiefs and the Eagles. But before we get to that, we've got to get through some Packers notes. We'll preview the Super Bowl a little bit between those two guys. And, of course, we'll play a little what we learned at the end of the game. But I can't start the show there. I just can't, in good faith, start the show there. If you watch us on the video stream, you obviously see on the right side of the screen our rundown, right? Like, we've got a couple notes, a couple words that explains the direction the show is headed. If you're listening on the audio side, you've never seen the video stream before, first off, I encourage you, head to ESPN Milwaukee or ESPN Madison on YouTube, and you can check us out there. But the very first note I have on the rundown today is Josh's dog. Hunter, any guesses as to what that could be about?
I thought it was Josh Jacobs talking about Devontae Adams being his dog and being a guy that he wants, but your reaction when I asked you about that tells me otherwise. So, Josh, did you get a dog?
Oh, so you thought I was referring to Josh Jacobs, not Josh DiMaggio.
Correct. Yes.
Yes. Now, to answer your question, Josh has had a dog. His name is Russ. He's a golden retriever, right?
Correct. Field golden.
Very cute dog. Very energetic dog. Joshy, rumor has it your dog got his cojones chopped off yesterday.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah, my boy, about 14 months, give or take, right now, went under the knife yesterday. He went into
my
surgery.
My boy went under the knife.
Uh-huh. Went into surgery. He had to be there around 7:30 in the morning. First, just not kind of where this is going to go, but I got a little, like, parent anxiety.
Oh.
Because they're like, yeah, he's going into surgery, and we didn't hear about it for 4 more hours.
Wait, so you didn't know until, like, noon?
Yeah, that, like, everything was okay. I figured it would be, like, it's a pretty common thing these people are doing. I wasn't particularly worried, right. But when they update you, like, yep, he's going into surgery, and then 4 hours surpasses, you're like, well, it can't take that long, can it? But, yeah, everything went fine. My boy was the first one released.
My boy.
Because when they do these surgeries, they do a whole bunch of them in a row, just kind of motor through them. There's different locations where this surgery team goes to.
Sure.
Mine
just
was the
snip,
first
snip,
one out.
Snip, and right in a row.
Yeah, you got it, pal. You nailed it, Hunter.
Mine was the first one out, and when they called us, the vet said, and I quote, yeah, he should be good to be picked up. It seems like he didn't even go through surgery today. And I said, well, that's my dog. Yeah, that's the one. So we went there, picked him up. He was still a little stoned because they're not supposed to get out till 4 or 5. I think the ketamine probably still had an effect on him because when we were at home, he would be laying down and then just get up and look at a corner of the room bug-eyed. And when you get a dog that goes through one of these surgeries, because where it's located, you need to keep them from jumping, keep them from running, stretching, things that will, you know, possibly irritate the incision they have on their stomach. Well, my dog is none of those dogs. My dog, within the first couple hours of being home, jumped from the floor to the back of the couch. He started getting the zoomies when I took him out to go pee. He jumped onto the bed. And mind you, I'm pretty much 24/7 supervision because he's in surgery. I thought, like, oh, he's going to be in pain. The guy's not in a single shred of pain.
He's just fine.
Like, nothing's happened to him. You would be none the wiser if you didn't look under or at the cone on his head. That's a giveaway.
Yeah, that is.
But yeah, he protested last night, didn't want to sleep, with his cone on. So my lovely Mussolini slept in the living room with him just because he, didn't want to be in his crate, but we needed him to be in his crate because you don't want him licking and all that stuff. So I'm being tasked with some errands. I gotta go get a sedative for him because he's not going to properly heal unless he's calmed down and sleeping and doing all the things necessary. So it's been a wild 24 hours. Gotta give him some more bones because he's back on those. But that's my life.
That's good.
And I have to mix in going to Goose two nights in a row, tonight and tomorrow. I'll be going with Greg and Ben.
Greg Scalzo and Ben Brust.
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, getting home after midnight, trying not to wake the dog up. I planned on having quite a few beers, but I don't know if that's a good idea, because I don't want to be waking the dog up to go to the bathroom if I, you know, if I've had a bunch of beers throughout the time. So that's just where I am right now. That's my reality. Of course, I have the dog that, you know, they told us, oh, he's going to be out of it tonight. Like, it'll be easy breezy. Just kind of keep him in. Not my dog. No,
no. Beautiful cover, girl. All right, this is the chop. This is the text I got last night from Josh DiMaggio. Can I read this?
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a dog that got his balls chopped out and is acting like nothing happened at all today. Just a madman. I could use a few brewskis.
Yeah. Yes. That's my life.
That's so good.
I mean, imagine that happened to you. You go through surgery, you're under you're like, hey.
I'm not running around and jumping on things.
No.
That ain't happening.
Famously, men get their snips done and sit on the couch with peas and watch March Madness. That's the most famous time for it. Not my dog. He said, what the hell? I'm ready to rock. We can't take him for a walk for 2 weeks. My dog walks 2 miles a day. What the hell am I going to do?
I don't have a good answer for you, unfortunately. Oh, that's so good. That's so good. Well, shout out to Russ. Hope he feels better. Enjoy Goose, by the way.
He hasn't felt bad a moment in his life.
That's fair.
He's just rip-roaring, ready to go.
He's a dog. Like, we refer to NFL players as dogs.
He is, yeah.
He's one of those dogs.
Yeah, I had to call the vet, and I was like, hey,
yeah.
He's doing great. Everything's going as if he is, but we need him to calm down so he can heal. And they're like, oh, yeah, that happens on occasion. So I got to go to the vet again 2 times in 2 days.
Yeah. All right. Well, the good stuff there from Russ, the golden retriever. You're a good parent, I think.
Yeah,
although you're abandoning him 2 days in a row.
Well, this is a whole nother thing. I'm trying to be very helpful as much as I can because I'm going to be gone the next 2 days. But this was booked purposely knowing I was going to Goose. Because the thought process was, well, you'll be gone 2 nights in a row, so I'll be able to just stay home with the dog and kind of hunker down.
Sure.
Because I probably wouldn't be doing much anyways because, I mean, these concerts are like 4+ hours
long.
You go out, have a couple drinks with the buds beforehand. Now, I was planning on probably going out after tonight. I think that's planned.
Kiboshed?
Yeah. I kiboshed it. I was not asked to kibosh. It was a self-kibosh.
Self-kibosh.
Yeah, just because I'm trying to keep things as peaceful and as nice, but...
So your lady's mad at you is what you're saying?
No.
I mean, this is what I'm hearing.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, that's good.
It's just I'm trying to do things to not get mad at, to have someone get mad at me for.
Sure.
You know, you gotta see ahead. You gotta see the forest through the trees. Hunter knows this. You gotta be a step ahead. You can't be
as
just...
As much as you can be.
Wham-bam it through life. Yeah, so here I go. Sober at Goose. I'm going to be one of one.
You will be the only, by far, including everybody on stage.
Yes, yes, 1,000%.
You will be the only non-working person there that's stone cold sober.
Yeah, and if you know anything about concert venues, many of those people working there aren't terribly sober themselves.
Not always. No, that's true. Well, good. I hope you enjoy. I hope your dog's all right. That is just, you told me a little bit of that story this morning, and I just laughed hysterically. Little guy got his
fellas.
His pair.
He's a few ounces lighter. And man, he's acting like it. Swift as the wind, brother.
I am speed.
Damn straight. All right, let's get to this. Jordan Love reacting. Well, we got to actually set this up because we had a special edition radio show Wednesday with the Chris Middleton News, so we did not get to this Wednesday. But Josh Jacobs making his rounds on Radio Row Wednesday down in New Orleans and essentially say, hey, we need a real number one receiver. He doubled down on what he had to say yesterday, making some more rounds, saying, yeah, I mean, like, I just think we need a proven veteran, number one wide receiver in that room. I love our guys, right? I mean, that was essentially Jacobs' message, which was not taken too kindly to by guys like Dontavian Wicks and Jaden Reed. But Jordan Love now is in New Orleans the last 48 hours. And now he's getting asked about adding a number one wide receiver. Take a listen from Jordan Love, NFL Live on ESPN yesterday.
How do you see this young group, and are there advantages in not having a number one?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think we have a different guys that can play and do different things better than other guys. And I think we have a wide or a deep receiver room. Obviously, like you mentioned, Tucker Kraft. But I think we got a lot of guys that can grow into that role. And I think we're still young. We're still building this thing. And guys are still proving themselves. So Josh, you know, he made those comments. I'm always right for my guys. I love the guys we have. I always say, if you add good players to an already good offense, I think, you know, you can make it a better team.
So that Jordan Love on NFL Live can make it a better team. He went on to say something to the effect of, you know, he was asked about T. Higgins. Well, that would tell you, you know, the sky's the limit if you add a really good player to a really good offense. Now, Jordan Love, I got to give him credit, man. He is much more media trained than Josh Jacobs has been this week. Like, you can tell, I don't want to say they're canned answers, but like, somebody prepped Jordan Love that he's going to be asked about this, and he had the same answer down no matter who asked it, no matter what show he was on, no matter who he was talking to. He had the answer of, yeah, if you add a good player to a good offense, it's going to get better. Well, yeah, that makes sense. So Jordan Love dodging the bullets a little bit better than maybe Josh Jacobs did. The point of the fact, though, is that this has some legs now, that every reporter from national to local to this show, to Kay Adams, to NFL Live, there is a real storyline that the Packers need to add a legitimate number one receiver. And while that was a thought towards the end of this past season when nobody really took that next step in that Packers receiver room, it feels very real now that Jordan Love is talking about it. Josh Jacobs is blatantly saying, hey, we need a number one receiver. So, believe it or not, by the way, and I saw Wendell Ferreira tweeted this. Believe it or not, Devontae Adams is still under contract with the New York Jets. I feel like we lose sight of that occasionally.
Yeah, I think we can. They're not going to pay him $40 million.
No. Are they going to release him, or are you going to need to trade him, though?
Right, but also, you save $30 million and you try and trade me him for a third-round pick, I go, ha! Good luck, pal! Have fun!
It's fair.
He's as good as a free agent as possible.
He is. Now he's 31, right? And there are some. And look, I don't know that the Packers will go the Devontae Adams, T. Higgins route, to be real honest with you. But I wouldn't be shocked if they added, say, who's an unrestricted free agent? Like a Josh Palmer from the Chargers?
Oof.
But he's 24. He's available. He's cheap.
Josh Palmer could play football for the rest of his life, and he would never be able to have two combined seasons as good as Devontae Adams' best.
Oh, I agree with you. But I am at a point where I don't know if Goody looks at that wide receiver room and says, hey, we really need a Devontae Adams or a T. Higgins. He should, and it would certainly help this team get to that next level, which is hopefully an NFC Championship game or a Super Bowl. But I don't know if Goody's going, yeah, we absolutely need a guy like that. What if he goes, hey, let's add Tutu Atwell in free agency and let's draft a guy in the third round.
Tutu Atwell, goodness.
I'm just throwing out cheap young
names.
These
names are hurting my feelings.
Well, I hope you understand. The best receivers that will allegedly be available are the following. In order, T. Higgins, Devontae Adams, Cooper Kupp. Right? We know those three names will be available.
I would drop Cooper Kupp.
I mean, I don't want him, and I don't think he's a Packer, right? No. Like, he's just very anti what Goody does. He's expensive, he's old, and he's slow. Like, it's just not, yeah. It's not a
injury
Goody.
Prone, too.
Yeah, injury prone. So it's not like he's not a Packer. But those are the three big names that essentially will be available, whether in form of a trade or free agency this offseason. After that, boy, does it drop off. Keenan Allen, Brandon Cooks, Amari Cooper.
Hollywood Brown.
Hollywood Brown's out there, which is actually kind of an intriguing name, but I think he'll probably be back in Kansas City.
Yeah.
But then after that, it gets to the names I was just mentioning. Chris Godwin's out there too. But then you got Tutu Atwell and Josh Palmer and like Deontay Johnson. This is not a sexy wide receiver market in 2024. So I would not be surprised if Brian Gutekunst takes a smaller swing on a guy like a Tutu Atwell or a Josh Palmer, and I know it hurts your feelings, Josh, but I legitimately think this is the route he could go.
I think they're better at talent evaluation than that.
But
I think they realize signing Josh Palmer to even $6 million a year is not as valuable as simply just drafting guys and hoping for better. That Tutu Atwell or Josh Palmer being an attempt at an answer to me would be like, we need to start questioning what you're seeing on film and what your scouting department's up to.
Okay, well, hold on a minute.
Tutu Atwell's a gadget player.
I agree. I don't know if he's a legitimate option.
He's Jaden Reed, but worse.
But worse, yes.
Josh Palmer was given the opportunity to be a number one guy.
Yeah, it's...
And never once even was a number, like, two guy.
Yeah, he was a guy I always thought would take that next step for, like, 3 years in a row.
He wishes he could have a year like Alan Lazard.
Whoa.
That's just the reality.
He wishes he could have a year like Al Lazard is the first time anybody's ever said that sentence.
That's what we're talking about here. I think we, as a fan base, would have a reasonable reason to be pretty upset if there's not a serious swing taken. Now, hey, the Davante Adams sweepstakes could end up wherever.
Yep.
Somebody could lose their mind and say, we're going to pay you $25 million mm-hmm. for 3 years, like over three... $75 million total dollars is what I'm getting at. And then it's like, well, then I probably would say that's not the best idea for the Packers to invest in. But Devontae's made it damn clear he wants to win a Super Bowl, and he feels like that's the missing piece of his legacy.
And it is.
It is. The Packers are one of, what would you say, 8, 9, 10 teams that you would say right now you would consider serious Super Bowl contenders.
Next year?
Yeah.
I'm going to put both the teams in the Super Bowl back in that conversation for obvious reasons. Let's start in the AFC. Baltimore's legit.
Yeah.
Buffalo's legit.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, I'm not counting out at this point.
I will. Joe Burrow stinks.
Well, that's not true, and you know that.
Comeback player of the year. Comeback from what? Stinking? Having the same record as Jake Browning? Sweet, bro.
Hunter pumps back into football music as he's just talking about Joe Burrow stinking. All right, so Cincinnati, Buffalo, Baltimore, Kansas City. That's probably it. Maybe the Chargers.
You have to. I mean, they have to be a part of the conversation just because it's Harbaugh.
Yeah, well, Adam,
Justin Herbert,
good with that.
Texans have to be a part. Their defense is legit. If CJ Stroud can play,
okay.
CJ Stroud plays better. They're up there.
So NFC, then Philadelphia, Washington.
Yep.
Green Bay, Detroit.
Yep.
So that's 10.
I think Vikings have to be included.
Okay, that's 11. I'm fine with that.
Who knows what happens with the 49ers?
Niners I will always put in there.
Yeah.
So that's 12.
Until Kyle Shanahan's not calling plays for them and head coach, I'm gonna say there's something to be worth.
I would say that's probably the end of the list. I don't think I'm putting anybody in the South in there.
No.
So there you go. 12 teams have a legitimate shot to win a Super Bowl next year. So, and Davante Adams does not play for one of them right now.
Nope. It really narrows it down. And if you watched what we did all season long, those guys, I'm not as down as it seems as some people are on Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks. Christian Watson's going to be hurt 12 weeks. Like, that's kind of what it is. Romeo Doubs, he's as good as out to me. I don't know what the plan is going to be for him, but I don't think Goody's or anybody's going to play lightly too. I skipped work thing. And I think that's going to loom for any potential of him being with the Packers more than just next year because he's under contract and pretty cheap.
Yep.
But like, they need to replace production, and in the moments when the Packers needed plays, they didn't have anybody who could do it from a pass casting sense. At times, Jaden Reed did it. At times, Dontavian Wicks did it. At times, Romeo Doubs did it. But none of them were reliable. It wasn't an impressive showing by anybody. Dontavian Wicks might end up being the best of all of them, and he turns it around and is a miracle. But you can't bank on that.
No.
You can't bank on Jaden Reed being able to suddenly start to beat man coverage.
No.
The book's out on him.
Stop saying that.
The people know how to beat. It's on him to be able to play better.
And he will.
He's a great talent.
He is. And I think
Deebo Samuel suffered from the same thing his whole career.
That's a good point.
He's still functional and very productive, but he needs special accommodations to be fully himself.
And the issue is Jaden Reed ain't Deebo Samuel yet.
No.
Deebo Samuel light, for sure, but he's not all the way there.
So to go into this season and the urgency thing, the 3-year plan, the 5-year plan, I mean, it's a glaring missing piece. Your running back went out, your best player last year, went out and said, hey, we're missing this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to imagine that's a conversation they're having in the building as well. I don't think Josh Jacobs is just self-diagnosing.
No. This now, clearly the reaction from guys like Jaden Reed and Dontayvion Wicks that tweeted, and there were some deleted tweets in there as well.
Both of them deleted. Oh, no, Dontayvion
Kemp. I think Wicks kept his up. Yeah. But the reaction they had, clearly this is not a conversation that he's had with them. But I bet this is a conversation he's had with Jordan Love. I bet this is a conversation he's had with Matt LaFleur.
Yep.
I bet this is a conversation he's had with the other guys in the running back room with him. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's why I think he was so comfortable saying it without realizing, ooh, my teammates might get a hold of
this. It seemed evident.
100%. And
we didn't get a chance to cover the real wide receiver thing at all, really, did we?
No, because Wednesday was all about Middleton. And that was the last time we had a show. So, no. It seemed like a Freudian slip a little bit.
I think it was just a little tactless. I don't begrudge anything him for saying it.
No, because I don't think he's wrong.
If you went on air and said you're not a real host or real producer and meant it and were saying it like, you know, only the biggest event in football... I'd be pretty upset, and I think most people would. I think the bravado of, no, he's talking the truth, is all BS.
Yeah.
You don't talk about your teammates and your friends that way.
That's just how
it goes. He's right. He's absolutely right.
He is right that they could use a veteran presence. Yeah. And that's kind of how he backtracked. He didn't really backtrack. He doubled down, but he did it much nicer yesterday by saying, yeah, I love the guys in that room, but we need a veteran presence. Okay. And I agree with that.
Yeah.
So... we will see.
I also thought Jordan Love's comments were, well, definitely more diplomatic.
Yes.
If I were him, I'd probably avoid all of that. And I know Josh Jacobs gives him cover, but I just say, I need to play better. I need to put them in better positions. I need to give them more catchable balls.
Fully agree.
And say, I'm going to let the GM do what the GM's going to do. I think me and my guys can go out there and win at the highest level.
Bingo.
That's probably the way I do it.
Joshy. need to get you two in a room for some media training.
I'll teach him about Benson Boone.
Chris Canty won a Super Bowl with the New York Giants, played 11 years of the NFL with the Dallas Cowboys, the Giants, and the Baltimore Ravens. Now co-host on Unsportsmanlike, weekday mornings 5 to 9 Central on ESPN Radio with Evan Cohen and Michelle Smallman. Chris Canty, presented by GNC, joins us now from Radio Row in New Orleans. All right, joining me now, Super Bowl champ, the resident Super Bowl champ on ESPN Radio's Unsportsmanlike, weekdays from 5 to 9 Central on ESPN Radio. The great Chris Canty with me now. Chris, appreciate the time from Radio Row in New Orleans, presented by our friends at GNC. So what are we getting into this week, Chris? Is it jambalaya? What are we getting into food-wise down in New Orleans?
Oh, we got a little bit of everything. We got the char-grilled oysters, the po' boys, jambalaya, crawfish etouffee, you name it, I'm going to have a little bit of it. I don't get down to the Gulf South as often as I would like, but while I'm here for Super Bowl week, I'm going to take full advantage.
I see you've got your beads on, Canty. Do I need to ask how you got them?
No, I didn't get them the traditional way, but when in Rome, do as, and the Mardi Gras beads this time of year is just a part of the culture, so I'm going to lean all the way in.
Is this your first Radio Row as a media member? Obviously, you had to go through it as a player, and we'll get to that in a little bit later. But is this the first time you've experienced it as a radio host?
No. So I've actually done a couple of Super Bowls. This is the first time that I've come down as a part of a show. This is our first big road trip for Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio, 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN 2, ESPNU, and, of course, SiriusXM Radio. But listen, it is awesome to be a part of Super Bowl week. It's like a big reunion, a big get together from past and present players. And so when you get down here during Super Bowl week, you have a chance to run into so many faces that you haven't seen for years. And it's just this big party. It reminds you of how special it is to be a part of the NFL brotherhood. And so I love being a part of this week as a player, but also as a media member and being a part of the ESPN family here on Media Row.
Well, dude, as I was going through some of the teams you played for and some of the coaching staffs that you were associated with, it's crazy to see the amount of
head coaches that you've worked with, right? Like on the offensive side of the football, you have names like Freddie Kitchens, et cetera. But on the defensive side of the football specifically, Chris, at some point in your career, you worked with guys like Todd Bowles, who's now the head coach of Tampa Bay. Mike Zimmer, who's the recently at least rumored to be a retired defensive coordinator, obviously former Vikings head coach. And the guy that is leading the charge for the Chiefs defense, Spags, was their secondary coach during your time in Baltimore. What makes working with guys like that so special? What makes guys like that special? Because you've worked with tons of them, whether indirectly or directly, during your time in the league.
Well, here's the thing. If you want to elevate your game and you want to be the best, you have to work with the best. And I was intentional when it came to choosing the places that I wanted to play, to not only be around great players, but to be around great coaches. And so having the privilege of being drafted to the Dallas Cowboys was awesome. But then when I became choosing the New York Giants and the Tom Coughlin, knowing what that coaching staff was, choosing the Baltimore Ravens with John Harbaugh, knowing what that coaching staff was, those were things that I was intentional about, because when you're around good coaches, they find a way to bring out the best in you. And as Tom Coughlin always put it, coaching is making men do what they don't want to do so they can become what they want to become. And I can say that about every single one of the coaches that I had the privilege of playing for on the defensive side of the ball.
Spags is such an interesting case. Obviously, the Kansas City Chiefs defensive coordinator looking for their third Super Bowl win in a row. I know he coached the secondary. No offense, Chris. I know you were more in the trenches than in the defensive backfield, but obviously you got to work with him at least a little bit. What makes him?
Oh, absolutely. And to have the chance to talk football philosophy. Like, right. That's the great part of being around so many great coaches. You have conversations in the cafeteria. You have conversations on the football field. You have conversations on the road trips, and just have a chance to talk ball. And one of the things that I really appreciate about Spags is that not only does he believe in putting his players in the best situations on a down-to-down basis, but he also understands the chess match and being able to set up calls for the most opportune time to have maximum impact. I go back to the AFC Championship game, that 4th-and-5. He brings that corner blitz. It completely throws off the play. And if you listen to the offensive linemen for the Buffalo Bills, they talked about all game long, Spags showing that look but not bringing that blitz. They slid their protection on that play away from the corner that Spags sent on the blitz because they didn't think he was coming. And that just shows you Spags is on another level when it comes to sequencing and play calling. We usually think about setting up plays from an offensive perspective. Maybe a coordinator wants to bring out this trick play, this flea flicker, this reverse, this throwback, you know, to maximize the impact that it can have and swing the momentum of the game. But Spags does that on the defensive end, right? And rarely do you see defensive coordinators being so proactive in that way. And I think that's why Spags is the most decorated defensive coordinator that we've ever seen in the National Football League.
How do you slow down Saquon Barkley, Chris Canny? Is that possible? Is it possible to slow down a guy that's done what he's done this year? Because Spags in that Chiefs defense has been phenomenal. But how in the world do you slow down a guy like Saquon Barkley, who's gone absolutely bananas this season?
I will say it to you like my former defensive line coach and now Tampa defensive coordinator Casey Rogers would say. Everybody on defense is at the point of attack. All 11 guys are at the point of attack when it comes to the Eagles' run game and handing it to number 26. And you got to go in the game with that mentality. Just because you might be on the backside of the play, the backside formation, like you might be the only guy that can make the tackle when Saquon Barkley decides to make his cuts. Like if you're a backside defensive lineman, you're a backside linebacker, you're a backside corner, you think the play is away from you, you're not involved in the action. No, you're involved. And you got to limit the airspace that Saquon Barkley has. One of the most impressive parts about this Eagles ground game is that even though Saquon Barkley has rushed for over 2,000 yards, 1,500 of those yards have come before first contact. This guy is averaging 4 yards a carry before contact. It's absolutely ridiculous. So you have to understand that you might be the last line of defense, no matter where you line up on a defensive formation. That has to be the attitude. That's how you limit the productivity of Saquon Barkley. Now, he's such a great player. I don't know that you can completely shut him out, but the goal is to limit his impact on his team's success.
Love hearing Chris Canty of Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio talk a little ball heading up to Super Bowl 59 down there in New Orleans. Want to bring it back to the Packers quick, though, Canty, because a couple of storylines I'm curious on your perspective on as a former player. Josh Jacobs, the running back of the Packers, was down where you are right now making the rounds yesterday, said something to the effect of, we need a real wide receiver one in the room for the Green Bay Packers. And some of the receivers in the room right now, not taking too kindly to that accidental, it seems, criticism from Josh Jacobs. If one of your former teammates, let's just throw a random one. How about your boy Spears, who you played with teammate now at ESPN? What if he was to say, yeah, we need a real D tackle? How would you respond to that?
Well, I wouldn't take too kindly to it, but here's the thing. Knowing what I know about Josh Jacobs and his story, if he's saying something like that publicly, I'm pretty sure he's told those guys privately. So any kind of criticism or any slight that he might have had in through his comments yesterday on Media Row, I'm pretty sure that he's expressed that to his teammates in terms of being able to want more from them at that position. And to a man, I'm sure that Josh Jacobs knows that there is more that he can do in order for that offense, in order for his team to be successful. So I think that, you know, it's always a learning curve when it comes to young teams trying to figure out how to deal with success. And we got to acknowledge that the Green Bay Packers 2 years ago, when they won that playoff game in Dallas, they were the youngest team to win a playoff game in 50 years in the NFL. So there is a curve to learning how to deal with success in this league. And I think 2024 was a little bit of that experience for the Green Bay Packers.
Totally agree on that. As you evaluate the first 2 years of Jordan Love, where do you think he ranks in the league? And B, do you think this is a guy that can lead this team to a Super Bowl at some point?
Well, he's a phenomenal talent. When it comes to physical gifts, there aren't too many quarterbacks that are going to outshine him in the NFL. It's just a matter of him being more consistent. And Jay Love has put together good stretches of the first two regular seasons where he's been the full-time starter, but he hasn't put together a complete season. And that's what we're waiting for, right? We know that he's got the head coach in Matt LaFleur. We know that he's with a stable organization that's always going to keep good players around him. It's just a matter of him being more consistent in terms of his approach and his overall development. So, I mean, this is going to be a pivotal year for him. They rewarded him. They paid him like a franchise quarterback. Now it's time for him to deliver with being more consistent. Now, the injuries early on derailed him somewhat, but that's not really an excuse. Nobody wants to hear about the injuries as to why the team can't be successful. It's going to be about making sure that he's more consistent in his approach. We all know he's got the talent to be one of the best quarterbacks in this league. It's just a matter of him being consistent week to week, game to game.
I want to play a quick game. We'll rapid fire these. Canty connections. You've played with a million people, Chris, and a lot of them have Wisconsin ties. Just want to touch on two in specific. Number one, your rookie year and your second year in Dallas, there was this veteran guard by the name of Marco Rivera. how were those matchups in the early time in Chris Canty's career?
Well, the key about Marco Rivera, if you were going to try to beat him, you couldn't let him get his hands on you because he had the strongest damn hands. I mean, you talking about grown man strength? That was Marco Rivera. Now, you could try to out-athlete him, get him in space, but if he could ever get his hands on you, you were going to have some problems. But he was a great teammate, a great offensive lineman for many, many years in the National Football League. Really, really consider it an honor to be able to call that guy a former teammate of mine.
And in New York, you played with a guy by the name as a tight end of Travis Beckham. I played in a charity basketball game with him last year. That dude can still move, Chris. Any Travis Beckham stories, the former Wisconsin Badger?
Oh, yeah. T. Beckham was awesome, especially in 2011 on our Super Bowl run. And, of course, he gets hurt the big game. But I wish I could have seen the end of that movie in terms of a fully healthy Travis Beckham and what his NFL career would have been like. But also, I think he's one of those tight end types that was ahead of his time. A guy that could be a receiver, receiver-like traits in a tight end's body, a tight end. If he came along a half a decade later, I think that Travis Beckham would have been a bigger deal in terms of productivity and impact in the National Football League. But he had a huge impact on my career. Obviously, he was a key part of our championship team in 2011. And he was a consummate professional and a great teammate. Overall, just a great guy.
Awesome stuff. Canty, appreciate the time. Always love hearing you talk ball. Brought to you by GNC down at Radio Row. Tell us about your friends over at GNC.
Well, GNC has been perfecting nutrition for 90 years. And listen, they got it down to a science. It's not just a department. It's a whole freaking store. I mean, they're going to help you sculpt that revenge body. They're going to make sure that you reach all of your fitness goals. I believe that health is wealth. And the best place to go to enhance your quality of life in that regard is GNC. Go to GNC.com or visit your local GNC store. I know I will. That's how I make sure I stay in peak condition.
He's a Super Bowl champ. He's the co-host of Unsportsmanlike Mornings on ESPN Radio. Kenny, appreciate the time as always, my man. We'll see you at the draft up in Green Bay in a couple months.
All right, looking forward to it.
That the great Chris Canty and Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio weekday mornings from 5 to 9 Central, 6 to 10 Eastern, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your local ESPN station, including ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee. Good stuff there from Chris Canty. Thanks to our friends at GNC and the team at Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio. So I want to dive into the Super Bowl a little bit before we get to James White, three-time Super Bowl champion and should have been Super Bowl MVP. Because I'm having a tough time figuring this one out. Chiefs are one-point favorites, right? I mean, it's the Super Bowl. It's the biggest game of the year. There are two really good teams, two really good offenses, two really good defenses going toe-to-toe on Sunday. I said this last year around this time, and it's still as simple as this for me. I can't bet against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in the postseason. I just can't do it. Because the minute you do it, is the minute you're proven wrong. Mahomes and Reid have this unbelievable, I don't even know what the word is. Like, they can flip a switch just like this, right? Regular season Chiefs are one thing. Postseason Chiefs, a different story. They are legitimately almost unbeatable. And I know questionable calls and officiating. I've heard all that, and I hear all of that. So I've got the Chiefs Sunday, but I asked Canty this, and it's a question I still have and will have until the fourth quarter on Sunday, is how do you slow down the guy who was named the offensive player of the year last week or last night? How do you slow down Saquon Barkley? I don't know how you do it. So the 1-2 punch of Hurts and Saquon is so tough to stop, so tough to slow down. I think this is going to be a really good Super Bowl, though. You know, I know we were disappointed we didn't get like Bills and Commanders or Bills Lions or something that was a little bit different than what we've had past years. We just had the Super Bowl 2 years ago. But this is a fun one. I'm excited for it. I am excited for Sunday. It's the last football game until real football game until college football kicks back up in August. So I'm excited. And I've got the Chiefs winning. Hunter, how about you? How are you feeling ahead of Sunday? Are you, you know, so before I get your pick, I got to tell you this because I know you're actually going to respect the hell out of this move. So Brian D. Hunter is obviously our director of content here at ESPN Milwaukee, and he is a diehard Buffalo Bills fan. So he is still heartbroken, even, you know, maybe a little less with Josh Allen winning the MVP, but very heartbroken following the loss that he was at in Kansas City. So he has decided on Sunday, rather than viewing the Super Bowl, he is going to go watch the Timothy Chalamet biopic about Bob Dylan. And he is gonna watch that instead of the Super Bowl. And I figured if anybody respects that move, it was going to be you, but it sounds like you actually don't respect that move.
No, like, it's literally the biggest game in the sport where he tells us all the time, if it isn't the Packers, why are you talking about it? Like, you've got to watch the Super Bowl. I understand that you're upset, but, like, come on, man. Just watch the game. Even if you hate, watch it. Like, just watch it. Like, you can't hate the Eagles that much. Like, just cheer for the Eagles then. It's not like the Eagles are a rival with the Bills. So, it's kind of weak.
I don't get it either, but it is what it is. All right, who you got on Sunday?
I want to pick the Chiefs, but I really think the Eagles are going to win. I think that O-line is going to wear down the front seven for the Chiefs. And it's just going to turn into a gross feeling game. As frustrating as that's going to be for the broadcast, and fans are going to hate the game, this is almost going to feel like a Wisconsin Badger type game, I think, from the Eagles. They're just going to run the ball and run the ball and run the ball. And it's going to look like the Badgers when they had Jonathan Taylor. and it's going to be gross and no one will like it, but they're just going to wear out the defense of the Chiefs and come away with a, like, it's going to be like a 4-point win, but it's going to feel like a much bigger win because they just control the line of scrimmage the entire game.
So we're split. I like it. I like it. I'm fired up. Well, you mentioned the Wisconsin Badgers, one of the all-time greats at Wisconsin. And you know what's awesome about James White? I was talking to Greg Scalzo, you know, formerly of Scalzo and Brust, prior to this conversation with James White. He's like, Strof, something about James White people don't realize is that guy was a third down back his entire life, right? Like, he was Giovanni Bernard's backup in high school. He was Clay, then Ball, then Gordon's backup at Wisconsin. And then he was never really the featured back during his time in New England. And I was like, oh my goodness, you're right. Like, he's never really been the lead horse, which is kind of fascinating about him.
Yeah, and what's crazy with that, too, is the fact that I remember when the Badgers had John Clay, and then James came in as a freshman, and they brought him in because they're like, no, we need this guy. We need him a part of the offense.
Yeah.
Still, third down back. Like, he was that good that they redshirted other guys in front of him so they could get him on the field. Still just the third down.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
It's just fascinating. And typically in college football, right? Okay, younger back who's the backup to a senior, he'll be the feature back going forward. Nope, it was Monte Ball, and then it was Melvin Gordon. But James always got his, right? He was a terrific running back at Wisconsin. Yep. And he was obviously a terrific running back in the NFL. Won three Super Bowls, played in two of them, and you will hear a little bit more on that in just a moment. Three-time Super Bowl champion James White right now on Mr. Irrelevant.
Always good to catch up with three-time Super Bowl champion and Badgers legend, our good friend James White, back with us here on Mr. Irrelevant. Of course, ahead of Super Bowl week. Always good to catch up with James. What's up, James? How you been?
Doing well, Alex, man. Appreciate you having me back on.
Always. It seems like the sneaker collection behind you has grown quite a bit since the last time we spoke. How often are you buying shoes, James White?
I buy shoes less often than, you know, when I was playing. Actually, the sneaker collection has started to dwindle down. I've been, you know, trying to sell some off. So trying to, you know, manage the shoe collection a little bit more than what I have.
Does the nickname Sweet Feet have anything to do with your shoe game?
Oh, yeah. It has many meanings. It's on the football field, off the football field, when it comes to shoes. And then I love sweets, too. So got a sweet, too. So that it all correlates.
what's on the Mount Rushmore of sweets?
So strawberry ice cream is definitely in there. Okay. Apple pie is definitely in there. Red velvet cake's in there.
Okay.
It's quite a few things, not going to lie.
I like it. Chiefs-Eagles. I feel like we've talked about this matchup before, probably because we did 2 years ago. Here we are again. Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, the quarterbacks going toe-to-toe Sunday in New Orleans. It's actually insane to me. Like, you were on a dominant team, James, right? Obviously in New England, that continued to get back there and was seemingly always in the big game. Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and the Kansas City Chiefs are that new era of dynasty as they search for their third straight Super Bowl win. As a fan of the game, now that you've stepped away from playing, do you feel Chiefs fatigue like many of us, no offense, felt Patriots fatigue back in the day?
No, I don't necessarily feel the fatigue. And as you mentioned, it's probably because, you know, I was on a team that was doing something similar, you know, when I was playing and even before I, you know, got to the NFL. But I get it from, you know, a fan perspective or a viewer's perspective, you know, constantly seeing the same team in the championship or AFC championship. You know, some people want to see something new. Then you have the other side where, you know, some people like to witness a team dominate year after year. So you're always going to have, you know, different viewpoints. I mean, I respect what they're doing. You know, we're always going to be compared, you know, the Chiefs and the Patriots. So, you know, from like a Patriot standpoint, you're like, man, like, I hope they don't, you know, win it because, you know, they'll start saying this and that. But hey, you know, at the end of the day, you know, records, history is meant to be broken. So we'll see, you know, if they can cement themselves in a, you know, their own category by winning the three-peat.
Well, they had to do the overtime thing last year, which was kind of your thing, James. And then they came to the second overtime game in Super Bowl.
I'm a Thunder, man.
Yeah, exactly. They keep stepping on your toes. As you evaluate Patrick Mahomes and what he's been able to accomplish in such a short time, I mean, is he already, he's not in the Brady conversation yet, but is he in the second greatest quarterback ever conversation already in your eyes?
Me, like I definitely 100% respect, you know, what he's done. I think there's just a ton of great quarterbacks that played this game. And, you know, what is this, like his seventh year into it? I think longevity still matters. He does have more Super Bowl championships than a lot of, you know, great quarterbacks that have played. But for me, it's just hard to just, you know, thrust him above, you know, guys like Peyton Manning and guys like, you know, Joe Montana and guys who have done it, you know, for a long time and at a high level. I think at times, you know, as viewers, we get recency bias, and what he's doing is amazing. And the pace at what, you know, he's winning championships and doing all that is second to none. So obviously if he keeps this up at this rate, I mean, who knows? He could end up, you know, as the best, or some people will classify him as the best. I myself will never do that because I'm going to be biased and I'll always have, you know, Tom Brady, you know, as the greatest quarterback, just because I've, you know, got to play with him. I saw, you know, what it took from him on a day-to-day basis, his approach, you know, shooting, taking care of his body, watching film, practice, you know, in game. So, I mean, maybe if I was, you know, Patrick Mahomes' teammates, I'd feel different and, you know, vouch for him a little bit more based on what he, you know, has going on. But that's just my opinion.
No, that's fair. And, you know, on the other side, Saquon Barkley, I think the last time you and I talked was last offseason, as we were heading into free agency and all these running backs were not getting paid by the teams they were drafted by. And boy, has that narrative changed in a year, right? What Saquon Barkley's done, what Josh Jacobs was able to do in Green Bay, and a bunch of other names that just had huge years. As you see what Saquon's been able to accomplish in Philadelphia, being named the Offensive Player of the Year last night, pretty good for running backs overall, I would imagine, is your perspective.
Well, it's awesome to see. For a position that gets written off or has been getting written off over the last, you know, several years, you know, probably like the last 10 years or so, as far as, you know, what those guys, you know, should be getting paid. It's good to see, you know, the guys who are at the top, you know, of that category, of that market, actually go out there and ball and prove themselves, you know, all over again, you know, leading football teams, being the reason, you know, why a ton of these football teams are in the playoffs or winning these games in the playoffs as well. So it's been fun to watch. And I always say, look, it's the salary that some of these players should be paid should be based on their value to the team versus just, you know, position based. Like Saquon Barkley should be the highest paid player on the Eagles. He should be making $50 million or however you should say. But, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, how it works, but I think it just comes down to value. Like, to me, there's just no reason, you know, I'll just put it like compared to other position groups aside from quarterback. Why can't Saquon Barkley make $30 million? Like some of the receivers, you know what I mean? It's like he has a huge impact on the team and whatnot. But hey, now maybe at some point it'll change. But I think what a lot of these backs have done this year definitely helps raise that stock for themselves and future generations.
Sounds like James White, the agent, maybe is the next chapter.
Yeah. Might have to work my way in there.
Get yourself a seat at the table and get a nice percentage for Saquon and all those other backs. So, do you have a rooting interest Sunday, or are you just kind of rooting for a good game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I want to see a good game. I don't care, you know, who wins it. I don't care if the Chiefs get a three-peat. I don't care if, you know, whatever, the Eagles get another championship. Doesn't necessarily matter to me. Should be a fun one to watch. You know, I think each defense, you know, is unique in their own right. You know, Philly, a lot of young players, a lot of young talent there. Vic Fangio kind of keeps everything in front. They play sound, you know, don't really try and give up the big play. And on the other side, you have Steve Spagnuolo dials up amazing game in the playoffs. You know, he's going to be aggressive, going to put guys in, you know, tough spots, and those guys typically, you know, find a way to come through. So, and then, you know, on the offensive side of things, we know what each offense can do as far as, you know, the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, they haven't been the most explosive all year long, but in the playoffs, they find a way to get it done. And then, you know, for the Eagles, you got a ton of weapons everywhere. They win, you know, any kind of way. You know, in the playoffs has really been, you know, running the football, and Jalen, you know, just doing what he has to do, protect the football, get the ball to your receivers when your number's called, and that has resulted in winning. So it'll see, to me, it comes down to what defense can, you know, apply a little pressure on each offense to see if you can make them play left-handed or do some things that they haven't been able to do all year long.
Last thing on the Super Bowl for James White, three-time Super Bowl champ with me here on Mr. Irrelevant. Halftime show is Kendrick Lamar this year. I'm very excited for it. Now, I believe the three Super Bowls you won, the halftime shows were Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, and Maroon 5, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't know. I don't know how much attention you were paying to that. But any stories of like your teammates being like, "Hey, I really like Maroon 5. I gotta see." Is there any? Because I know Brad Nortman, who I think you crossed over with a little bit.
Yeah,
when he was in Super Bowl 50 with the Panthers, he's like, "Yeah, we had a couple specialists that wanted to sneak out and see whoever the halftime show was there." Any instances of that?
Oh, it's a funny story. Like my rookie year. Wasn't playing the Super Bowl. Didn't play pretty much all year long, except for three games. The rule for the inactive players and you know guys that weren't playing the game, we weren't allowed in the locker room at halftime. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So we had to stay out on the field, you know, on the sideline. So we got to watch Katy Perry right there from the sideline, right live and in person. So yeah, I got my one experience of being that close to a halftime performance. Yeah, it was definitely a sick feeling, you know, not being in the locker room with your teammates, but that was Bill's rule. Hey, and I got to experience that.
That is incredibly strange. That was Bill's rule. That was not an NFL rule.
No, but that's just Bill's rule. Yeah, man. Hey, you don't want anybody, you know, not necessarily focusing on the game, distracting, you know, guys who are supposed to be locked in and, you know, trying to make, you know, some quick adjustments going into the second half.
So you're out there dancing with the left shark to California Girls rather than game planning with Bill and PB.
Yep, Eye of the Tiger, all that good stuff, listening to it right in person. So yeah, definitely a unique story. Like I said, hey, it kinda, that'd be probably the one time I ever get to do that. So that kind of is what it is.
That is fantastic. Let's flip over to the Badgers quick because coming off of a disappointing year, right? 5-7 finish. The bowl streak is snapped this season. And obviously, right, quarterback injuries, a ton of other things went wrong. But ultimately, fell short of that six-win mark. Coming off of a year like that, after breaking what was one of the longest streaks in the country in terms of bowl eligibility, what's the feeling of an alumni like yourself?
Well, it's definitely not great. You want to see, you know, the program thriving. You wanted to see it, you know, doing better than even when you were there. And I know they've been going through transition over the last couple of years. And this year is going to be extremely tough. Once again, a very, very tough schedule. A lot of good football teams that we're going to have to go up against. But, you know, why wouldn't you want to have it any other way? That's how you really figure out, you know, who you are. You got to go up against the best. So I know they've been trying to make some changes, trying, you know, figure out, you know, what guys can stick and, you know, fit what they're trying to do. I think it's all about continuity. The more guys, which is hard in college football these days, the more guys they can, you know, get in as really true freshmen and retain those guys for the 3 to 4 years, I think the better off, you know, they will be. But it's just so tough, you know, in this era, especially, you know, find a quarterback, trying to keep a young quarterback. He's trying to compete with a junior. He doesn't win the job, well, he's probably going to transfer because he may get another opportunity somewhere else. So I think it first starts with finding a young quarterback, which I know they have Carter Smith, and they had a couple guys, young guys, transfer in. So we'll see, you know, when it comes to that. And I think that's the most important thing. I think, you know, this talent sprinkled, you know, all around the roster. It's just all about those guys coming together and competing.
Are you glad you played in the era you did? Obviously, a lot less money goes your way when you're not playing in the NIL era, but also a lot more continuity, lot less turnover year to year in terms of roster. I imagine you're very happy you played when you did, despite the fact you weren't pocketing, say, 200, 300K a year.
I guess that's the, there's some give and take to both,
for sure,
you know, eras and whatnot. Yeah, you would love to make money, but I don't know if the locker rooms are quite the same. Like I'm not in it. Like I help out at NIU right now. I know those guys, they have a pretty good bond. You know, last year we had a senior class of like 30 kids. So a lot of those guys, you know, stayed there for, you know, 5-6 years and were there, which is, you know, kind of rare in college football. So I think the more you can have those bonds, I think that's the thing, the most unique thing about college football, those relationships that you build. Like, you know, my best friends to this day are from my college football team. Like I obviously have best friends from, you know, high school and growing up like that. But some of my best friends that I talk to every single day from my college football team. And I think that's what makes, you know, Wisconsin unique to me. Is I always, when they allow me to talk to the recruits, I express to them, like, you know, how much this program means to me, and you know, how much my teammates mean to me, like whether we played together or whether we didn't, like whether it's Brian Calhoun or whether it's, you know, Hunter Waller. Like if I bump into these guys, it's like a connection because we all kind of, you know, grinded. Maybe not did the same exact things, but we right. put in the same type of work. And I think that's what, you know, makes Wisconsin a unique place. So, and we typically recruit a certain type of guy. And I think that's why, you know, those connections are made, you know, whether you actually have known the person for 10 seconds or 5 to 10 years. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, they continue to recruit those right type of players that can, you know, grind on the field, lead on and off the field, you know, be good people as well. I think, you know, Wisconsin's a unique, you know, university, a unique program. You know, it all comes down to, you know, winning football games now, which, like I said, I like Luke Fickell. I know he's in a tough spot right now. A lot of probably pressure from the outside looking in. I'm sure they'll get it figured out.
Yeah, they will. It's just such a unique era, right? We're as we've talked about many times before, between the portal and trying to land the right quarterback, which is obviously an important position to figure out in this day and age. It might be a grind, but we will get there. You mentioned it briefly there, though, James. Player personnel role at NAU under your former running backs coach Thomas Hammack, who's of course the head coach at Northern Illinois. You're one of that for you. What was that role like for you? What did you have to do on a weekly basis, and how'd you enjoy it?
No, honestly, the first year I was just kind of just watching, in a sense, just sure. You know, seeing the day to day basis as far as, you know, the coaches, the actual player personnel were recruiting and everything. It's more of me just keeping my eyes on things and learning, you know, that way. Obviously, I was helping, you know, with the running back, sitting in on the running back meetings and doing everything like that to, you know, keep them up to speed, or, you know, meeting with guys that they wanted to meet one-on-one, you know, watch film, talk live, talk about the NFL. You know, that was what it was more like in year one. Year two, I'm definitely trying to, you know, get more of the player personnel, probably help with recruiting and evaluate guys who kind of, you know, be side by side with Coach Hammack and, you know, the recruiting coordinator, and just kind of help them see if we can find the right fit, or, you know, see if I can find, you know, different guys that they may not even have their eye on. So I always feel like I've had a pretty good eye for talent, and then why not start here?
Yeah, I would say it worked out all right. And right, 3-time Super Bowl champion, 2-time All Big Ten. He might know a thing or two. That's for sure. Well, that's fantastic. That's a really cool opportunity for you. I mean, what can't you do? We're talking about you being an agent. Obviously, you're doing the Money Down podcast with your boys, which of course you can find wherever you get your podcast. You're coaching a little bit. So do we give you full credit for the upset win over national runner-up Notre Dame? I believe James White gets all that credit, right?
I have zero credit because that was all Coach Hammack and all the players, man. They handled their business, and just a testament to, you know, his coaching style and making sure those guys prepare and they believe, you know, what they can actually go out there and get done. A lot of talented players. Like I said, no matter whether a group of five, power five, power four, however they describe these schools these days, and, you know, you just got to line up and, you know, play physical and may the best team win.
And Northern Illinois, certainly the best team that day. He won't take it, but I give all credit to James White, the former Badger running back. Before I let you go, James, who's winning on Sunday, Chiefs or Eagles?
Now, I've been saying Eagles. I'm still not completely convinced with my choice, but I guess I just got to stick to my word. I'm going to say the Eagles win it. You know, hopefully Saquon Barkley, you know, does enough to, you know, continue to take pressure off Jalen Hurts. And, you know, Jalen Hurts played an amazing game the last time these two teams matched up, just had the one fumble. So if he plays anything like he did, you know, a couple years ago, I think they have a great opportunity. I think it just comes down to probably the turnover battle. Whatever team, you know, doesn't turn the rock over, you know, probably ends up winning this football game. Gonna be fun to watch, though. I think it's gonna be exciting.
These are two clean teams in terms of the turnover category, too, right? These are teams that don't make those mistakes at this point in the season. So we will see. James White, the Money Down podcast. Always appreciate the time, my man. We'll do it again soon, all right?
All right, thank you.
The great James White, 3-time Super Bowl champ, should have been Super Bowl MVP back in that 28-3 comeback for the Patriots over the Atlanta Falcons. People forget, that dude scored 20 points in that Super Bowl. He scored 20 points, three touchdowns, and a two-point conversion. I know, right? When the greatest quarterback of all time leads the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history, I guess he gets the award, huh? But famously, we've talked about this with James, you know, past appearances when he's been on here. Tom Brady gave him the truck that he received for winning MVP. So James White, I don't know if he, I think he still has the truck. At least he did last year. I didn't ask him when I talked to him. But yeah, interesting. Thanks to James White. Thanks to Chris Canty for jumping on with me today ahead of Super Bowl 59 coming up Sunday. It's Chiefs and Eagles from the Superdome in New Orleans. It's a 5:30 kickoff. Chiefs are 1-point favorites. All right, you learned something new every day. We learned something new today. It's time now for What We Learned as we wrap up the pre-Super Bowl edition of Mr. Irrelevant. Tiny Hands, the floor is yours.
I saw this come across Twitter, and I was just fascinated by this, so I needed to share it today. On your screen right now, you will see the stat comparison over a five-year stretch for the great Ted Williams compared to Anthony Rendon of the Angels. Now, this
I have no idea where this is going.
So, okay. Ted Williams, those stats on the left are from 1942 to 1946. The stats on the right for Anthony Rendon are for the duration of his contract with the Angels from 2020 to 2024. Okay. As you can see on the screen, Ted Williams has a higher WAR. He played in more games, more plate appearances, hits, home runs, everything except for stolen bases. In that five-year stretch from 1942 to 1946, Ted Williams did not play in the 1943, 1944, or 1945 seasons because he was serving in World War II. And he's still in a five-year stretch. Statistically was better than Anthony Rendon, who was paid by the Angels $245 million. And I absolutely love that. Ted Williams is the GOAT, or one of the GOATs, I think. Like, that's incredible. But then the fact that he was serving overseas for 3 years and still had a better five-year stretch. Anthony Rendon sucks.
Dude. I had no idea where that was going. That was phenomenal. What a payoff. Oh, that's good. Yeah, shout out to Ted Williams. Wow, how random. I loved that, Hunter. That was fun.
That's why I love Twitter still. It's a dark place most of the time, but
we learned Anthony Rendon sucks and Twitter sometimes fun.
You can still find some gems.
So I was at the bar last night.
Shocker.
Thanks. We had a teammate in town from Colorado, so we were having a few drinks with her, and you know, I'm at the bar, and this lady comes up to me, and she goes, "This is a great song playing," and it was, I forget the name of the song, but it's the final song played in How I Met Your Mother. Great song. They play it often. Wait, Will just raised his hand. Do you know what song I'm referring to?
Is it The Night We Met? No. No. I'm thinking of a different TV show. Never mind.
Okay. Dynamite dropping, Will. Great job.
Thanks, Will.
I'm an idiot. Sorry.
No, it is not The Night We Met. But anyway, I noticed this very thick accent. So it turns out she's in Milwaukee for work from Scotland. And she goes, "Yeah, America's been great. You know, Wisconsin's been great other than how cold it's been. But I'm having a real hard time figuring out this driving thing." And I was like, "Yeah, what do you mean?" She goes, "Well, in Scotland, we drive on the left side of the road, and our steering wheel is on the right side of the car. Everything is reverse here."
Oh,
and
yeah.
I go, "Do you have a driver's license?" She goes, "In Scotland." I go, "Can you use that in America?" She goes, "I think so." I guess I haven't Googled it, so I'm going to go, do you need a U.S. I'm pretty sure you need a U.S. driver's license to operate a vehicle in the U.S., don't you?
I don't know, because I feel like you could rent a car, because, like, I think about a show like Amazing Race. They go through all those countries, and they have to drive in them, and they don't have a driver's license in all those countries. So,
I'm looking it up. Depending on the U.S. states you visit, you may need an international driving permit, which you might have, I guess. But okay. But I was fascinated to learn that you don't necessarily need a United States, because you said she rented a car, mm-hmm. so she must have had the right paperwork. I was floored by that. I was so fascinated by that.
Which then also makes me even more nervous to go to, like, touristy places. Like, I don't want people, like, I'm nervous enough when I have to drive a lot of places. And now that I know that, like, people aren't properly, like, able to drive in the U.S., that's terrifying. You've just made my anxiety worse. Thank you.
All right. Good. I'm happy I can do that prior to the weekend. Well, that will do it for us. The big thanks again to Chris Canty of ESPN Radio's Unsportsmanlike and James White of the Money Down Podcast, both Super Bowl champions, previewing the Super Bowl a little bit with me today. Hope you enjoyed. A little bit more conversational today than we typically are, but I figured ahead of the Super Bowl, let's have a few people on that know a thing or two about winning Super Bowls and enjoyed the conversation with Chris Canty and James White. Thanks to Hunter. Thanks to Joshy. Thanks to Will Summers for hanging out with me today. We're back with you Monday, beginning at 12:30 Central, ESPN Madison, ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you rate us 4 stars, not 5, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And click subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Been good to see some of those 4-star reviews rolling in, so keep those coming if you're not already subscribed to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll talk to you on Monday. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Enjoy the weekend. Be safe. Be smart. Have some fun, would you? We'll talk to you Monday. Peace.